The Juan Soto pursuit is heating up this week with some interesting teams jumping the line. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Tuesday, November 12th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rauch, Christian S. Rauch, R-A-U-H on the Twitter machine. And Christian, I want to get to some of the expected deals in free agency, the good ones and the bad ones. I want to get to the award finalists and things like that. But Jeff Passan reported just this morning, minutes before we started the show, that the Juan Soto pursuit is heating up, right? There are teams who are going to be meeting with Juan Soto this week. We had already talked about the Yankees. We had already talked about the Mets. But before those teams meet with Scott Boras and Juan Soto out in California, two teams have jumped ahead of the line. The Toronto Blue Jays and the Boston Red Sox are both going to meet with Juan Soto before the Yankees and Mets do. Obviously, Mets and Yankees are still favorites. And obviously, Juan Soto is a fit on just about any roster in baseball, right? He makes any team better. But let's start with the Blue Jays first. How should we feel about their reported interest in Juan Soto? Is this legit, or is this doing our due diligence to see if we'd have a shot?
I think you can think that this that the Toronto Blue Jays are legit. If you think about their roster right now, they're in a really crazy point in their roster construction. They still have Bo Bichette. They still have Vlad Guerrero Jr. They have a decent pitching staff right now that can carry this team if need be. And you look at how they have, for the last couple of years, with the exception of 2024, we have entered the offseason, entered opening day, thinking that Toronto Blue Jays could be a contender. There has been multiple times in the last 2-3 years where, like, well, yeah, Toronto could be an easy team that can lead the NL or the AL East. There's no doubt about that. Adding in a guy like Juan Soto, that could definitely be a game changer, no doubt about it. Let's think about that. Bo Bichette, which they already said they are not going to trade him, no doubt whatsoever. Vlad Guerrero Jr., he's a pending free agent after this season, but there's talks that an extension could be happening. Then you add a guy like Juan Soto. I mean, that is those are three hitters right there, Lindsey. We talk about that all the time when you get to the postseason. So I do think that's really interesting. I think they're legit. I think this could be a really legit thing. Let's see if the plane ride actually happens, because we know it didn't happen to Shohei Ohtani. But if it does happen and the Blue Jays are the first in line, then that's definitely an interesting little card in the mix that I wasn't counting for.
Yeah, and what I think helps with this, if they are able to land Juan Soto, I mean, we've already established he makes any team better, right? He was a spoiler alert for the next segment. He was an MVP finalist this year. But when you look at their starting roster, I'm going off of FanGraphs right now. 7 of their projected 9 are under the age of 30. Left fielder Nathan Lukes is just barely 30. George Springer is the old man in the group at 35. Everybody else is 26, 27, 25, 23. And so adding a 26-year-old in Juan Soto into this group, you can really see how this could make them significantly better. He instantly would slot into George Springer's right field position. Springer would be able to move to DH, which is filled right now by Spencer Horwitz. You have a lot of young pieces here. And you're right that Bo Bichette's a free agent soon. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is a free agent soon. Guerrero feels like a much better lock to get a contract extension than Bichette does. Although, if you think Bichette's going to rebound, try to buy him low on an extension now. I don't think he's going to take it, but you could always try. But this is definitely something where, yeah, they've looked for a running mate for Vlad Guerrero for a while. They thought they had that guy in Bo Bichette. It turns out he's not the guy we thought he was. He batted 225 this year, 4 homers, 5 stolen bases, and just about, I think, 336 plate appearances, significantly underperforming what he was capable of and what he's shown flashed in the past. But Soto, I mean, you instantly would have to assume this was one of the favorites in the American League East to battle with the Yankees and the Orioles. So I'm buying this too. I'm buying that Toronto has the money. Toronto could sell the ability to market him and Vlad to an entire country of Canada, right?
Yeah.
And the fit on the roster without having to make any significant sacrifices. Although I do wonder, would you be able to re-sign Vlad if you have to commit $600 million to Soto? The Boston Red Sox, though, I'm a little bit less sold on the fit here simply because, I mean, this means you have to move on from somebody. Your outfield right now, Willie Abreu in right, I think was good enough to be a Rookie of the Year candidate. He didn't make the list. Again, spoiler alert for the next group. Zidane Raphael in center, Jaron Duran in left, Masataka Yoshida is your DH. You're taking, obviously, you are better when you put Juan Soto in this lineup. You're better in any lineup. But the delta between who he could be replacing and who, you know, who you have to bench for this isn't as significant. Now, we know the Red Sox ownership group has the money. We also know they haven't been willing to spend it on the Boston Red Sox roster. They're preoccupied with their soccer dealings, with all of their other stuff. But I also, this just doesn't really strike me as incredibly likely when you look at the history of a team that wouldn't pay Mookie Betts, that wouldn't pay Xander Bogaerts. They moved Mookie for not a lot of pieces left on the roster. They let Xander Bogaerts leave in free agency, and they finally signed Rafi because they couldn't let three big free agents leave. The fit here doesn't make nearly as much sense as it did for Toronto. And so I think this is more just due diligence than it actually is a legitimate pursuit of Juan Soto.
It would definitely change the idea for most fans in Boston, though, how they view John Henry. There would be no doubt about that. After the Mookie Betts, after Xander Bogaerts, after all that stuff, it would definitely change the entire last decade narrative of how they feel about the Red Sox owner, for sure. I don't feel like it's going to happen either. I don't think it's the right fit as well. But the Red Sox are a surprising team, and they could easily get into this mix, and it would not be... When it was said and done, I don't think that they're going to be the team that lands Juan Soto, but if they were the team, I would not be surprised, just because who we are talking about, just because they do have the financial compensation to do so, as you mentioned. I want to real quick just jump real fast back to – no, actually continue. We'll talk about – I have something about the Blue Jays, though, before we end this one. I'm really interested about it.
Okay. Real quick, when I'm thinking about the roster fit for Juan Soto in Boston – and I don't know why I didn't think of this when I was talking earlier. I guess the best thing you could do is move Zidane Raphaela to short, move Trevor Story over to second to fill that hole they haven't been able to fill at second, let Jaron Duran play center, put maybe you put Juan Soto in left in the short field and left. Maybe you move Willie Abreu over there. But it feels like, now that I think about it, you can make this work. And the person you're replacing in the lineup is whoever, you know, David Hamilton, Vaughn Grissom, whoever would have been your second baseman. But it's still not a perfect fit. What was your thought on the Blue Jays?
Well, a perfect fit for the Red Sox would be if they signed Juan Soto, they could trade a guy like Willie Abreu to the White Sox and also get Crochet. I mean, that would be like the perfect fit for Boston. That would work out. But for the Blue Jays, and we were just talking about it, the Dodgers are obviously one of the top teams that are going to be in every free agent conversation, right? They're a California team. I'm not really too big into Canada economics here, but how does the taxes run into a Juan Soto deal for Toronto? Do you think that's going to be an impact if you're trying to sign a big free agent like Juan Soto if you're going into Canada? Is it the same concept? I'm not sure.
I'm sure Toronto has, on average, higher taxes than the states do, simply because, you know, all of the other social services and things like that. And not everybody's obsessed with cutting taxes like we are. I'm sure it's probably not California levels, but I'm sure it's higher taxes. And it does complicate things a little bit as far as now you have to file taxes in multiple countries. It's a whole thing. It would be interesting. I don't quite know the ramifications of that. I need to look more into that because I know that did play a part in California in free agency.
Yeah, this is probably why the Rays are still in it, right?
Because of Florida taxes. There you go. And then I hinted at this earlier, but The finalists came out for MVP, for Cy Young, for Rookie of the Year, for Manager of the Year last night. And I think a few of these were a little bit surprising. So we'll just start at the top. National League Most Valuable Player, Shohei Ohtani, Francisco Lindor, Ketel Marte. That all seems pretty reasonable, right? Like, I don't think there's anybody that we're really arguing should have been in that group over those guys. I've seen Ellie De La Cruz suggested. I don't quite think he beats Lindor or Marte in here. Any objections to those three as your MVP candidates in the National League?
Yeah, no, I think that those are the three that should deserve to be there. I agree that De La Cruz should maybe receive top five votes. I think Marcelo Ozuna could be in the mix, and then you have some other pitchers as well. But no, I think these are the top three.
Okay. American League MVP award. Aaron Judge and Juan Soto both made it, as well as Bobby Witt Jr. I think we obviously expect Judge to win, just like we expect Ohtani to win. Witt's probably second place. But Juan Soto being in the top three, I don't know if I expected that. I've seen arguments for Jarren Duran that he should have been in that group. But I feel like at the end of the day, this three is defensible, right? Having Juan Soto in there at number three makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and didn't Durant kind of fall off towards the second half of the season? Because I know he started off very strong. Like, are we talking really strong?
I think he struggled a little tiny bit, just like, Witt had a small struggle. Judge had a struggle earlier in the year. I think Durant had a small struggle, but this was something where he led in doubles, he led in triples, he led in at-bats, played appearances, and he actually beat Juan Soto in Baseball Reference WAR. So I think that's kind of why a lot of people think he should have been up there, was by WAR, he was more valuable than Soto. I think a big part of that was defense and base running too.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, looking at NL Cy Young, this is the first one where I really kind of had a shock, okay? Chris Sale of the Braves won the Triple Crown. We expect him to win this, right? Zach Wheeler of the Phillies, best season of his career, 257 ERA, WHIP was best in the National League, broke 200 innings. Okay. Paul Skenes was the third nominee or the third finalist for Cy Young. Is that expected? Do we think it should have been somebody like Ronaldo Lopez, maybe? If you're looking at Skenes made 23 starts, 133 innings. Ronaldo Lopez pitched 135 innings. His ERA was 199, second best behind Skenes. Do we think that Skenes over Lopez was the right move there?
I think this is going to be the most interesting finalist and interesting award winner when it's all said and done. The reason behind that is I'm going to go out on a limb and say this isn't even surprising to me about Skenes. We might even see Paul Skenes finish second or potentially win this award, Lindsay. He had a 212 ERA plus at the end of the season, rookie year. If it wasn't for an innings, really the only issue he had was innings compared to all the rest of them. Chris Sale, I do think, deserves this still. He did win the Triple Crown, but I would not be shocked to see Paul Skenes finish second in this award or even remotely win this one because of how he finished or how he just had his season. But no, I don't think it's surprising that he's in this one.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is Skenes over Ronaldo Lopez, the more that I think about it, Skenes' innings were because he didn't come up until May 11th. And Lopez did go in the IL multiple times. And so I think I'd understand that. It is going to be frustrating if Sale pitches 177 innings, you know, leads the majors and wins an ERA, has the Triple Crown, and doesn't win to a guy who pitched 50 less innings than him, right? That's going to be 44. That's going to be frustrating, but I do think he's going to be in here. And I think the fact that he's in this means that when we get to Rookie of the Year, I don't think we're going to be surprised about the winner of that one. Looking at the American League award, Tarik Skubal of the Tigers, Triple Crown winner in the American League. We expect him to win this. Seth Lugo of the Royals, 206 and two-thirds innings, an even ERA of 3, and this is what's great. Run value on his fastball, the 94th percentile. Run value on his breaking ball is the 99th percentile. Like, just domination with just about everything that he did, right? And the third guy, Emmanuel Clase, They vote on this before the postseason. He had a 0.61 ERA in the regular season and led the American League with 47 saves. Is this the right three to have for the Cy Young finalists in the American League? Or are we thinking somebody like Framber Valdez was a little bit overlooked in this in place of Lugo?
Yeah, I think Framber could have been overlooked. I think Corbin Burns could have been overlooked in this one. But I really like seeing Emmanuel Clase in the award. I do think it's really interesting. Don't quote me on this. I looked at this quite some time ago. But I think Kenley Jansen was the last one to be a finalist as a reliever for the Cy Young. I don't think he finished actually a top three. I think it was actually a fifth place finish. And I'm glad that you're looking it up. But Clase, I think he deserves to be a finalist. And it's cool that he's going to at least finish top three. I think he should finish second. If it's all said and done, I think Tarik Skubal deserves this award. What he did this year, just like what we saw from Sale, winning the Triple Crown, that's an important part in this game. When you look at wins, ERA, strikeout, that's still an important part of this game. I know that when you look at Triple Crown from the other half, the batting position side of it, I don't think it's as important as the pitching side, but right. I do think Skubal deserves the AL Cy Young. I think you should put Class A second, and then I do think Lugo should be third because you could easily put him out for somebody else.
Yeah, so I believe you are right on the Kenley Jansen thing. The last time it's the last time anybody finished in top five, a reliever did. It's been 16 years since a reliever finished in the top three. And the last reliever to win it was, I believe, Eric Gagne of the Dodgers in 2003.
Wow, so, that tracks.
Yeah, yeah, he had an amazing year. Okay, so if we move on from this to Rookie of the Year, National League, we can guess the three names: Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill, Paul Skeens. Churio, from June 1st on, was one of the best players in the National League. 3.05 ERA, 16 homers in 97 games. First player in MLB history to have a 2020 season before turning 21. Jackson Merrill came out, did it all year, tied for all rookies in home runs with Colton Cowser at 24. Paul Skeens, obviously, in that group. Do we think that the National League, that is the right three, or is there a case for somebody like Mazen Winn, who led all, I think he led all but one rookie in Baseball Reference WAR at 4.9.
All three of these players in the National League Rookie of the Year race, and I'll even add Mazen Winn to this conversation as well, would win the American League Rookie of the Year award. That's how crazy the National League has been this season. Yeah. But I think they got the right three. I think that Mazen Winn should have been the odd man out in this one when you look at Skeens, Merrill, and Churio. It's going to be a really interesting race. And I know we just talked about Paul Skeens being in the Cy Young race and might even potentially receive some first-place votes. But what Jackson Merrill did this season has been super impressive. First season ever being in center field. Never played center field in the minors. Goes and plays it in the major leagues, and looks like it's just second nature to him. And not only does it do second nature, he's an all-star at the position for the National League, and he's going to be possibly a Rookie of the Year. So I do think it comes down to Skeens and Merrill. I think we'll see Churio in second place, but I would not be shocked if either one of the two are the winner in this one. Could we see Skeens win Cy Young but lose Rookie of the Year? Could that be possible?
I feel like maybe. I don't think he's going to win Cy Young, but it is something where I just feel like I am asking to have a position player Rookie of the Year and a pitcher Rookie of the Year, because I do think there is a bias on a lot of the award voters to vote for pitchers in Rookie of the Year. And we've seen amazing debuts. Spencer Strider came in second to Michael Harris. Like, there's a lot of things like that that don't make a lot of sense.
Even if they want to keep it two awards, like, they just don't make it a league award. Make it a MLB batter of the year for rookie years. Yep. And MLB pitcher of rookie of the year. Yep. I think that they should do that as well. I agree. This is the perfect year to make the case, because in the National League, Merrill should be the top batter on both leagues. Skeens should be the top pitcher in both leagues.
On the note of Jackson Merrill, by the way, his plus 10 fielding run value via StatCast was 10th, was actually tied for 9th in all of baseball. And again, had never played the position until opening day when he was the starting center fielder. There's something to be said for the Pirates or the Padres strategy, just build the whole plane out of shortstops, right? Okay, over in the American League, your list here, Colton Cowser of the Orioles, Luis Gill of the Yankees, Austin Wells of the Yankees. One, was Wyatt Langford of the Rangers snubbed in this? And two, which of these guys should win the award?
I think
will win the award.
I think Cowser wins the award, but I do agree. I think Langford was snubbed at this one. He should been a finalist. And I think you could have took out either Gill or Wells, and I think either of them would have been fine. I think that there's a large gap between Cowser and the other two on this list when we do finish off the awards. Gill had a great first half of the season. He struggled towards
May,
the end.
He was lights out in May. ERA was 0.70 over six starts in May, but he finished with a 3.5 ERA. And this is one of those situations where, you know, this should have been Langford over Gill, honestly.
I agree. And there was a conversation where we were heading into the All-Star game at one point, like before the All-Star game, I should say, that there was a potential to have Skeens versus Gill, two rookies starting in the All-Star game. That's how good Gill was the first half of the season. Obviously, it never panned out because he did step it down a little bit. He did have some injuries as well. And then Wells didn't start off great, and he had a sort of a resurgent towards the end of the season. So I do think that you don't have a between the two, they have one fantastic season, and they both made the World Series. I know that these are both picked after before the postseason, so that doesn't count, but recency bias is still always a thing. Let's keep that in mind. But I do think Colton Cowser is going to be the winner in this one.
There you go. Yeah, and I feel like probably the same thing, but again, this is the time to just make it position player rookie of the year across baseball, rookie pitcher of the year across baseball, and let both Merrill and Skeens get the awards. So, all right, manager of the year, National League, you've got Carlos Mendoza of the Mets. The case here, they were 11 games under 500 on June 2nd, and they not only went on to make the postseason, but they led baseball in one-run games, they had 41 comeback victories, and then obviously the voting came in before this, but they went all the way to the NLCS. Pat Murphy of the Brewers, they traded away Corbin Burns early. They lost Christian Yelich in mid-July. They integrated a 20-year-old outfielder in Jackson Churio and won the division. And then Mike Schilt of the Padres, not only making the postseason, but almost chasing down the Dodgers. This juggernaut Dodgers team improved them by, I think, 11 wins from last year. Are these three the correct three? Or did Dave Roberts navigating all these injuries with LA get snubbed in this one a little bit?
A long time ago, it feels like a decade ago, but it was probably like episode 40 in our thing, Lindsay. We talked about the Manager of the Year award, and I think we talked about Dave Roberts, and we said he shouldn't be considered for this award because it should be expected of him to do good things with this Dodgers roster. And I'm going to stick by that. I do think Pat Murphy deserves this award, what he did with the roster of the Brewers. Nobody had Milwaukee on their bingo card being even remotely close to a playoff team, and he won the National League Central. So I'm sticking with Pat Murphy. If I had to guess, I'd say Murphy wins it. Schlitt comes in second. Mendoza comes in third.
I think Murphy should win it as well. I do think you're going to see Mendoza come up over Schilt, simply because the expectations, I think, were different for both teams, right? The Mets weren't expected to be competitive. They didn't look competitive when June started, and they turned around and got it. Whereas the Padres, I mean, yeah, they went from missing playoffs to making the Padres, but it was ultimately an 11-game improvement. And I definitely do think that Murphy should win. Mendoza, to me, feels like he's going to be second place in this. The AL is going to be really interesting, I think.
Insane. It's going to be crazy.
AJ Hinch of the Tigers and what they did. They won 24 of their final 34 games to make the postseason, right? After selling at the deadline. Matt Quatro of the Royals, they went from 106 losses to 76 losses. They improved by 30 games. Steven Vogt of the Guardians. some of the second best record in the American League after taking over for Terry Francona, having never been a manager before. Are these the correct three names? Or speaking of new managers, is what Joe Espada was able to do to rally the Astros after a terrible start and take them to another division title, did he deserve to be in over one of these three guys?
Props to Espada, because he did, you know, some really interesting things. Takes the Astros from their worst start in franchise history since 1969, brings them back and gets into the postseason. But these are the right three managers. There's no doubt about it. All three of these managers, all three could win the award, and I wouldn't even be upset one bit whatsoever. Every single one of these player or managers deserve the award, and I'm not even going to pick who I think is going to win, because I think it's that close, Lindsay.
Yeah.
I think Hinch could do it because the fantastic run he had towards the end of the season. I think Fangraphs had them as a 0.2% chance at the trade deadline to win to get to the playoffs. And not only
they made it
to the playoffs, they went deep in the playoffs, right? The Royals, that huge swing, just like they did, just like the Orioles did the year before. And might I remind you that Brandon Hyde won the Manager of the Year award last year for that same swing. Yep. So you could put Quintero in that conversation. And obviously Stephen Vogt in his first year, what he did with the Guardians was insane. So any one of these managers could win the award and I'd be completely okay with it.
Yeah, I do think when you get to Espada, yes, he is a new manager, but also it's the Astros. And at a certain point, you're kind of expected to do some of that stuff. Yes, you dealt with injuries, you know, whether it was Verlander, whether it was Kyle Tucker, who I still don't know if he actually even has a shin anymore or not. But I think I agree. Matt Quintero deserves the award. Probably AJ Hinch could win it. Stephen Vogt could win it. A lot of the Baseball Writers Association of America guys have a affection for Stephen Vogt because he was always a good interview as a player and things like that. But I do think any of these three could win it. I'm going to go on a limb and say it's the Royals that take this, but I think anybody could win it. I don't necessarily think there's any real arguments here. Either way, you can't really get mad over any of these three guys winning it. And this is really the only race, I think, where you can say that for any of these races, any of these three guys could win and you're okay with it. Last thing, I had a yesterday's show. Troy was in for you, obviously, Veterans Day. We wanted to give you the day with your spouse and everything. We had a conversation about which free agent this year is going to, in retrospect, have the worst free agent deal. He said Alex Bregman, the third baseman of the Astros. I said Pete Alonso, the first baseman of the Mets. Who do you think in this free agent class, when we look back, is going to be the closest to an Anthony Rendon-style just disaster of a contract?
I like Bregman's idea. I like Troy's idea. I don't think Alonso is going to get a huge contract, so I don't think that's going to happen. That's on your one. So just for the fact that I think we're going to get a short Scott Boras, I messed up kind of contract for Pete Alonso, just like happened last year. So we'll see what happens there.
Okay.
But speaking of a mess up of last year with Scott Boras, I'm going to go with Blake Snell. I think Blake Snell is going to wind up being the contract that we look back at that he's going to finally get after not getting it last year. And it's going to be regretful, because I think after 2 years of figuring it out and doing it in the second half, I think it's finally not going to happen, Lindsay. I think we're going to see some kind of decline from Blake Snell. I mean, look at pre-All-Star game last year, 6.31 ERA. Now, obviously he signed late. He had some injuries. He had some minor leagues and bounced back and forth. I don't expect it to be an ERA of six. But I don't think we're going to get post All-Star Blake Snell, where he pitched a 1.45 ERA moving forward. I think we're going to get a high three, maybe a four ERA guy, and that might be good enough. But when you look at the money wise, I think they're going to wind up regretting it. So give me Blake Snell.
The thing for me with Snell is he's never been great with walks, and I just worry about, you see a pitcher throw so many breaking balls. I mean, he led baseball in walks in 2023 with 99 at 5 walks per 9 innings. I mean, it's nuts to me that, one, he was able to perform well enough to win the Cy Young despite that. But it just doesn't feel like a profile that's going to age very well. And, you know, you have that glaring issue that's just outstanding. And just, I do think that you could see if Blake Snell does finally get that deal. And I think that's the big question. Does he finally get that deal, that long-term deal? It could end poorly. I know MLB trade rumors predicted him. I think they said 5 years and $160 million. That seems like it could be a little bit of a mistake. But it's just wild to think about a two-time Cy Young winner we could be talking about could have the worst deal in free agency in 3 years when we look back at it. But it's just, I do think if you sign him, it needs to be a max 4 years at one of those just super high AAVs, right? Not, you know, maybe you probably end up having to go close to the Verlander, Scherzer, Wheeler tier of somewhere close to 38, $40 million. But I do think not getting him for 6 years is probably the key. And if this deal is any longer than four, I think you're probably majorly regretting anything after the fourth year. And even the fourth year, you're probably not thrilled with what you get simply because the flaws are there for Blake Snell.
There is a possibility, Lindsay, that two of those three players could wind up on the same team. We could see a Snell and Bregman on the same team, or we could see a Snell and Alonso on the same team. And that would be absolutely wild if that happens, if the three of us are predicting them to have bad contracts. I do like Troy's, though. I'll have to agree with him. Out of the batters, I think Bregman is going to be that contract as well. I can't agree with you on the Alonso one, just because I think it's going to be a short-term one, though.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a lot of teams have just gotten better about a bad defensive first baseman whose really only skill is mashing home runs and how that hits an aging curve. So maybe baseball's gotten better from the days of like Ryan Howard. That was the comparison I made on the show yesterday. So this has been a First Pitch for Tuesday, November 12th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review with some good words, some nice comments for us. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Maybe also leave us a 5-star review with some nice words, because we always love words of affirmation. That's our love language over here on First Pitch. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.